very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi there.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
Good evening.
Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
And boy, we have a special show for you tonight. It's 2 hours. 2 hours long. And it's going to focus on some pretty interesting things, and we're going to be offering some very amazing premiums to people who support us over this 2 hour fundraiser. And a very important 2 hour fundraiser at that, because, as we've mentioned in the past, the station is in a very transitional stage, and I don't think, events of the past week could have proved it any better. 13 programs on this radio station, 13 weekday evening programs have been canceled. And we are not one of them, not yet anyway. And it could still happen. It's unfortunate that we can't have a continuation of some of the really amazing shows that have been on our airwaves over the past bunch of years, but the creditors are knocking at the door. And we have to figure out how to get them to go to another door or pay them what they're owed and move on. This radio station will survive one way or another with your support, and hopefully we can rebuild.
Yeah, we'll so if you know of anyone who owes the creditors more than WBAI does, give us their address so that we can send them over there.
That's a good idea. That's a pretty good idea. But so much has happened in the past few months. It's really pretty historic, groundbreaking. And controversial. We've moved in the last year, okay? This radio station has moved from our posh Wall Street offices. Well, they weren't that posh, but they were on Wall Street, and they cost a lot of money. Well, we moved up here. We're currently sharing space with our friends at WHCR, our Harlem Community Radio here at City College. And we've unfortunately had to lay off, I think, about 75% of the staff, making things a lot more challenging to operate. And now some very painful programming changes have taken place, with more undoubtedly on the way. We absolutely have to have our listeners there for us to help guide this ship into something positive, into something that is exciting in these controversial times. And we're going to try and cover that in the next 2 hours. We'll try and cover the simply unbelievable, unimaginable developments that have been taking place over the past few months in the world, and things that this particular radio program, since its inception 25 years ago last week, it's the kind of thing that we're fascinated by. It's the kind of thing that that keeps us awake, that keeps us alert. And I know the listeners feel the same way, because the only reason we've been on the air for 25 years, this particular radio show, is because listeners have been there listening and supporting. We don't have commercials. If we did have commercials, we couldn't talk about the things we're going to talk about tonight. Could not do that. So listeners are the sponsors. And tonight we hope to be able to prove that. We hope we get a very strong response. We got a good response last week, but it could have been better. And we hope tonight makes up for that. The fundraiser is about midway through, maybe a little bit less than midway, and we do need to pick up some steam. If we do that, then all sorts of things become possible in the future. We're talking about our new Brooklyn building. We're talking about reworking everything and starting again, starting from scratch almost, to get a really decent community station going here in New York City, talking about the controversial issues. There are so many of them. There really are. There have been. There always will be. And I think radio is something that's always going to be extremely pertinent. Mike?
You mentioned that we could have maybe done better last week, which is true. We did well, but we could have done better. But one thing that did excite me about how we did last week was that we got quite a number of people to sign up for the BAI Buddy program. And this is the program that you call the number, which do you remember?
The phone, 516-620-3602. I'm happy to say that I now say that number in my sleep. So it has finally settled in my brain. 516-620-3602. Now, you can call in, become a BAI buddy. for $10 a month or however much you want to pledge per month. And what you'll get when you do that, you'll get the 8-gigabyte thumb drive with 100 different speakers that have been highlighted here in WBAI over the years. You can also get a best of WBAI thumb drive for a pledge of $50. There's all kinds of levels. And we're going to have something very, very special we're going to announce in just a couple of minutes. But the thing to write down, the thing to start spreading and tweeting and whatever else you can do, that number is 516-620-3602. We're going to be saying it quite a few times over the next 2 hours because without that number, we don't have a future. Try running a radio station and operating off the top of the Empire State Building in New York City, which is where the Empire State Building is, and broadcasting to four different states over the air. And this doesn't even count what you can hear over the internet. There is a lot involved in that, a lot of expense involved in that. We've cut so much of the expense by not having the Wall Street rent, unfortunately, by not having 75% of our staff, and various other painful cuts that have had to be made. And that hopefully will keep the place from sinking completely into debt and woe and all kinds of horrible things like that. Your support is what will get us above and help us move forward. Again, 516-620-3602. But we're going to have some very interesting things to thank people with in just a moment. I wanted to focus, maybe preview a little bit what we're going to be doing over the next 2 hours. Mostly, we're going to be focusing on the incredible revelations that have come our way through Edward Snowden, the NSA leaks, but also some of the things that have happened through Bradley / Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks, and just the history of leaks, revelation, freedom of information, that kind of thing, and how important that has been over the years, over the decades, to keep democracy alive. And I think we're seeing a real battle right now between people that get that and people that think it's a threat. Now, it was only a few months ago that the name Edward Snowden was mentioned for the first time in the mainstream media when the NSA scandal began, when he basically left Hawaii for Hong Kong and released a whole bunch of information that has the intelligence world spinning to this day. Bernie, do you ever think a day like that could have come?
I'm really surprised. The NSA has for many decades kept a very, very tight lid on what it does, and it's a really interesting continuation of a trend, starting with maybe even starting earlier than the gentleman who leaked the Pentagon papers. Help me out here,
Daniel Ellsberg.
Thank you, Bradley Manning. WikiLeaks, and there's been other people as well. I don't want to leave out the other players, but this has been such a significant development with Ed Snowden leaking NSA documents that it has risen to the highest levels of government around the world. World leaders around the world are agonizing, pontificating. And this is really interesting. A lot of world leaders are squirming about how this is affecting geopolitics and what people are finding out about what our governments are doing.
Well, speaking of squirming, there was a bit of squirming today, actually, by way of the director general of, let's see, who is this exactly? This is the Royal United Services Institute, Andrew Parker, the Director General of Military Intelligence Section 5, known as MI5. Widespread leaks of official secrets, such as those passed on by NSA leaker Edward Snowden, are a gift to terrorists. Yes, that's what the new head of Britain's Security Service said in a rare and frank speech. It actually took place late yesterday. Now, this is his first public outing since taking over as MI5's director general back in April. And Andrew Parker said the leaks caused enormous damage to the British equivalent of the National Security Agency, which is known as, anyone want to guess who that is? Anyone?
GCHQ.
Very good, Bernie. 20 points for you. Government Communication Headquarters, GCHQ. We are facing an international threat, and GCHQ provides Many of the intelligence leads upon which we rely, said Parker. He's been with the agency for 30 years, so his mind is pretty much theirs. In the speech for a London think tank, that's who I mentioned before, the Royal United Services Institute, that's where these comments come from. Now, he did not mention Snowden by name. He said that the security capabilities made public by media reports based on documents he stole were incredibly harmful. It causes enormous damage to make public the reach and limits of GCHQ techniques. Such information hands the advantage to the terrorists. Parker led MI5's response to the 7/7 London bombings. He said it's the gift they need to evade us and strike at will. Unfashionable as it might seem, he added, that is why we must keep secrets secret. Well, folks, what do you think? Do secrets have the right to remain secret?
I've never been a slave to fashion myself, Emmanuel.
That's true. That's true. Mike?
I mean, I think this guy, like all these people in his position, positions like his, do not understand that there are people who wish to keep secrets from the government who are not terrorists. This is just a category of person that does not exist in this gentleman's mind. And I really wonder how to change that. As for the specific claim that terrorists are being aided, there's no evidence for it. If these guys had the slightest bit of evidence for such a claim, they would be plastering that on the front pages, not these weird, unbased-on-anything assertions. So I think the fact that they have all the information and they haven't leaked or stated publicly or any other way shown that terrorists are enabled by these actions is a real strong clue as to exactly how much the terrorists are benefiting.
Well, you could basically say that a terrorist could benefit from any bit of information that is given to them. And it's a clever way to try and just have people write you a blank check and agree with everything you say that, okay, yeah, we trust you, keep things secret, and as long as the terrorists don't find out, even if it's, you know, how many floors are in the Empire State Building, yeah, keep that secret, because if they found that out, they'd have an advantage. It's nonsense. It's insane how many secrets were kept, and I think the American public is much better off knowing the extent to which they are being watched by the NSA than being ignorant of that. And if that helps the terrorists somehow, I can't imagine how. It helps us. And sometimes it feels like the American public are being thought of as the enemy by these agencies. Alex.
Well, you know, last week I was over at the International Association of Privacy Professionals meeting in Seattle at the Privacy Academy. One of the keynote speakers was Stuart Baker, who's a very prominent lawyer, former general counsel of National Security Agency. And I should mention as a caveat, there'll be lots of caveats to this comment, but I used to work at his law firm in Washington, and he's a lawyer in private practice. And he made the argument, and this is his argument, it's not mine, that this did in fact hurt our defenses because it gave terrorists a kind of playbook in the sense that, you know, instead of talking about marriages and instead of talking about these big parties that they're going to attend, now they realize that it makes it more difficult for intelligence agencies to collect their communications if they start talking about a lawsuit or some kind of, you know, medical assistance, some kind of privileged communication. But I have to say, I mean, I don't necessarily buy that argument, but it is the first time that I've ever heard somebody speak with any specificity about the type of data that could be harmful to the United States. And you know, quite frankly, I don't necessarily buy the argument. I think that they probably had this argument ahead of time, but it was an interesting argument to hear.
Well, I should point out at this stage that to sort of counter what we read just now from England, there's another side to all this, and you might have read about this as well. Edward Snowden, who is the quote-unquote fugitive American former intelligence worker currently living in Russia, has made the shortlist of three for the Sakharov Prize. That's Europe's top human rights award. Edward Snowden was nominated by green politicians in the European Parliament for leaking details of U.S. surveillance. Nominees also included Malala Yousafzai, the Pakistani teenager who was shot in the head for demanding education for girls. And former recipients of the prize include Nelson Mandela and Aung San Suu Kyi. Mr. Snowden's nomination recognized that his disclosure of U.S. surveillance activities was an enormous service to human rights and European citizens, the Parliament's Green Group said. Snowden, who has sought asylum in Russia, said in a statement read out in Parliament that he was grateful to Europe's politicians for taking up the challenge of mass surveillance. The surveillance of whole populations rather than individuals threatens to be the greatest human rights challenge of our time, he said. Now, the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought is awarded annually in memory of Andrei Sakharov, a Soviet scientist and dissident. And you know what? They're going to be announcing this tomorrow, October 10th. The winner of this year's prize will be announced tomorrow. By the way, the third nominee for the award is actually a group of people, Belarusian political dissidents who were jailed in 2010 for protesting against the disputed re-election of President Alexander Lukashenko. Whoever wins the award, what really matters is being recognized. Nominated, I think, is quite a statement right there. And it shows that there are many people all around the world who realize that revealing information is a courageous act. It's a necessary act. And it's something that we need to keep our free society free, or to restore it to freedom. With that in mind, we would like to announce what we are offering tonight as a special thank you to people calling in to 516-620-3602 and supporting WBAI through Off the Hook. What we have done, and this has taken quite a long time. I mean, let me just start by asking around. We've heard about these leaked documents. We've read about them in the newspapers, but how many of you actually have them? How many of you have actually grabbed them yourself and have a notebook with them, or have some kind of a listing? You know, we know about them. We've read the news accounts, but putting them all in one place, that's more of a challenge than it should be. And I can attest to this because I was witness to our friend Kyle, who was basically looking all over the place, finding the actual documents and trying to get them into one place. Well, we have succeeded, or we're 90% there, in getting all of the leaked documents that have been revealed so far in however redacted a form they might be, and sticking them onto a single thumb drive. So what we have a compilation of all of the publicly leaked NSA documents that Edward Snowden has revealed. And it includes also the full video interview, and you can basically access this now safely, anonymously. You don't have to worry about anyone spying on you on your computer, watching where you go, what websites you visit, because it'll come to you on a thumb drive that you can download and copy at your convenience and spread throughout the world, which is the intention of leaking these documents in the first place. So not only do you support WBAI, you support the original intention of Edward Snowden to get these documents to as many people as possible. That's a pledge of $75, 516-620-3602. I think this is pretty amazing and creative and different and a little scary, because here we are basically helping with this courageous act. We don't have the courage that Edward Snowden had. Let me make that clear. To make the sacrifices that he made, to give up his life, and to be thought of as public enemy number one by so many powerful entities, that's the kind of courage I don't think any of us could touch. But
Emmanuel?
Can I finish my sentence at least?
Sorry.
we basically can help in whatever way we can, by offering this. And this is our gift to people who call in and pledge $75 right now to 516-620-3602. All of the NSA documents, including the slideshow about PRISM with all its ugly graphics, they all will come to you on an NSA thumb drive, and the video interview as well. 516-620-3602. Yes, Bernie, what would you like to say?
Well, not only did Ed Snowden give a lot of, by his own admission, in a video, which I believe is going to be on this flash drive, is it not?
Yes.
Explaining that he gave a lot of thought, soul-searching, to determine whether he wanted to risk his life to make the world aware of how their privacy is being so grossly invaded by the by the U.S. through the National Security Agency. That's how serious this is. And you mentioned that Ed Snowden is now up for in the short list for the Sakharov Prize, and there's another prize he's been nominated for by the ex-NSA CIA chief, General Hayden. Didn't he, in the past week, just joke about putting Snowden on another short list?
Yes, I believe it's called a kill list.
Yes.
Is that right? And, you know, when the ex, was he head of CIA?
He was a former head of the NSA and former head of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, he still has a lot of phone numbers that he could call and make things happen. So it's got to be really, really scary for someone even to make a joke like that, because who knows how many people out there take that seriously, really believe that kind of thing. And it's something I cannot even fathom, that kind of courage to stand up to that. So us doing this, us talking about this, is just a small tribute to that kind of inspiration. And I know there are other people out there, because a few years ago we were talking about Bradley Manning and how courageous and inspirational that was. Well, now we're talking about Edward Snowden. In a couple of years, who knows who we're going to be talking about in the future. 516-620-3602. I also wanted to add something to this, because we have an additional premium that we also like to offer. We have the WikiLeaks thumb drive package. What that is basically a compilation of documents and video, totals around 4 gigabytes. And that's what was released by WikiLeaks since the year 2008. It includes the Afghan War Diary, which is more than 70,000 Afghan war log entries, the Iraq war logs, that's about 400,000 log entries, that's a lot of reading, from the Iraq war, more than 2,000 secret U.S. embassy cables, known as Cablegate, and collateral murder, two different versions of collateral murder. Unfortunately, they both end the same way. And that's also yours for a pledge of $75. You can get both of them. You can get both thumb drives. Or I'm not sure if everything can be crammed onto one big thumb drive. I guess we'll try. But basically, you can get all the information, WikiLeaks and the NSA leaks, for a pledge of $125. 516-620-3602. It's kind of premium that we don't usually offer here at WBAI, but it's the kind of thing that WBAI is here for. So it's great to be able to figure out a way to share the information and to spread the information, and to be a part of all this, to help out in whatever small way we can help out. And your help is what keeps this place going, that enables all these voices to be heard. 516-620-3602. Rob.
Yeah, and if you're the type of person who believes it's worth your time to be able to take a look at these things, not just look at stories that this media outlet or that media outlet are saying that quote maybe a line or two from one or two of the pages of one or two of the documents that are in this massive pile. When you have your own copies, you can look at it for yourself, draw your own conclusions without any filters in between. And spreading that kind of information is what we've been about on this show and on this radio station. And if you call 516-620-3602, or if you point your web browser while supplies last to give2wbai.org and put your pledge through that way, we can send you one of these to thank you for helping to keep this information source out there, to keep us able to do this.
Is the supply of web browsers limited?
The supply of web browsers may or may not be limited, but the supplies of stuff that we have, the number of these that we have to give out, unfortunately, are limited because we have to get them made. So if you go to WBAI.org, you may find some left after the fact if you're listening to this on an MP3, on a podcast, on a cassette tape, whatever, what have you. Then you can try it that way. Or while we're on the air, you can also call 516-620-3602.
That's the best option, is to call now. Obviously, if you're in the future, you can only call in the future. But if you're listening now, you should call now. And whenever now is for you, I don't know.
Or if you're listening in the past, you should call in the past as well.
I just think it's a really handy thing. And I didn't realize how difficult it was. And this is kind of typical of computer nerds, that basically, I don't know if I should say we or they, organize things, do amazing work, but sometimes it's all over the place. Sometimes you really have to go crazy trying to figure out how to collate everything into something that's easily read by a layman. And there's laymen all over the place, people who really would benefit from all this. But if you call your parents or call your relatives or call your kids or whatever, and ask them, hey, where are all those WikiLeaks files, or where are all those NSA leaks that we've been hearing about? You'd be hard-pressed. You could find news stories about them, sure, but to find the actual documents, which is the meat of all this, that is harder than it should be because, well, we just get distracted by so much. Things are basically released at different times, different dates. Here we have something that can fit in your hand that will have all that information. Imagine intelligence agencies hearing this right now, how they would be basically sighing in dismay that it's this easy. Well, I guess they're not sighing in dismay. They're probably saying all kinds of words, and maybe they're aiming drones at us right now. But you know what? We have to do something, and we have to save this place. And if we have to use leaked documents from the NSA to do it, I think that's poetic justice. 516-620-3602. Please join the people on the phone now. Show your support for WBAI. Pledge $125 gets you everything. both packages, the WikiLeaks package and the NSA package. A pledge of $75 gets you either one, both on thumb drives. And for those of you who aren't as computer literate as you might think we are, thumb drives are basically... Who wants to explain what a thumb drive is? Anyone? Mike?
I don't really know how it works, but you plug it into your computer, and it's USB, so you can't plug it in the wrong way. It's really simple. You plug it into your computer, and the files are just there. I don't know.
It's magic.
It's magic, it really except is. It's not.
Well, it is. To some people, it would be magic. It's magic to me. It's as simple as it can possibly be.
It's about the size of your thumb. That's
why it's called a thumb drive. Yeah. It's called other things, too, though. Are there other words?
Small thumb, you have.
Is it zip drive? Is that one of the words?
Zip drive is something else.
That's something else. Okay.
Well, technically, it's called a flash drive.
Flash drive.
Which is a term of the type of memory that's in the device, flash memory. And it's non-volatile memory, which means you don't have to keep power to it. It will stay there as long as you want it to. You could, if you want... You could put other things on this flash drive if there's some extra room, where you could delete files from there you don't want and replace them with other files. But it's kind of like a portable hard drive from your computer, but it's really small. Like you said, it's the size of your thumb. You can put it in your pocket, and your friends can say, hey, are those classified NSA documents in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
Oh, boy. And, you know, the thing is, there is no DRM on these documents at all, much to the chagrin of those intelligence agencies. Yes, you can copy them as many times as you want. You can put them up on your website. You can print them out and put them in everyone's mailbox in your neighborhood. You can do anything you want with these because they're there. They're open. They're out. And they're all going to be in one place. One very small place, but it's an incredible amount of information all brought together. And I really think this is something that those people who do take a stand, whether it's Julian Assange, whether it's Edward Snowden, whether it's Chelsea Manning, these are people that I think would, I hope would approve of this effort of ours to help get the information out there and help save this radio station from falling silent or turning into something commercial that would never talk about things like this. And that's kind of, I think what intelligence agencies want us to become is a safe voice or something that just plays the hits or just reads the press releases or various things like that. Well, you know what? As long as we're here, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep speaking out. We're going to keep revealing information. We're going to keep analyzing it and figuring it out. Because those people who keep the secrets, what gives them the right? We do. We give them that right. And we can review that right and revoke that right. Your call to 516-620-3602 is a vote in that direction. Again, $75, the NSA package on a thumb drive. $75, the WikiLeaks package on a thumb drive. $125. You get them both. And boy, what a lot of information that is. Hundreds of thousands of documents. Well, we have a special guest joining us tonight.
That's right. Speaking of the magic and the wonders of technology, we have a very special guest with us tonight, Michael Jenke, the CEO of Silent Circle. Michael, can you hear us?
I can, gents. Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. Well, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you. You know, a couple of weeks ago, and I think you and I spoke out this earlier, but a couple of weeks ago we had the pleasure of having Phil Zimmerman on, and he, you know, kind of wowed us with the with his technical know-how and wonderful phraseology of things like computational infeasibility of decrypting data and whatnot. And so, For the people that didn't listen to that particular program, can you give us a little bit of background about Silent Circle and how Silent Circle fits into this whole debate about privacy, security, surveillance, and the surveillance state?
Sure. Well, Phil is my co-founder, as well as John Callis, the creator of Apple's whole disk encryption. We are a very unique global encrypted communications firm doing encrypted phone, video, file transfer, text, mobile desktop video, and the calling plan. You know, it's an interesting time to be doing what we're doing. We built an all-star team of literally who's who in, you know, Internet Hall of Fame, encryption, and VoIP. We're at about 73 employees now. We've been launched less than a year, and we've become kind of the worldwide brand on secure communications. Of course, timing is everything. You know, we built this under the auspices that the NSA and the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else was grabbing everything out of the air and surveilling us. And now, since the summer of Snowden, we now know that to be true. We've had about a 400% increase worldwide in customers, and we're growing faster than we can actually handle it. But, you know, the interesting part about what we're doing, we really have three customer bases. We have private citizens from 131 countries around the world subscribing day in and day out. We have enterprise. We count 18 of the Fortune 50 as customers. And believe it or not, we have government. We count groups and agencies from about 9 different countries as customers, such people as the Dalai Lama. So it's an interesting time to see this reaction of people now that it's rubbed in their face to want to take back their privacy. And not just here, it's in Tibet, it's, you know, it's in Tunisia, it's all over the world.
It's really interesting that you say that. I mean, and I love the phrase, the summer of Snowden, as well, I have to say. Fantastic phrase. One thing that's interesting, you mentioned the uptick in security, and you know, as you know, I'm a lawyer, and it's my understanding that there's an uptick in law firms using Silent Circle in certain parts of the world. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been eye-opening for us to see how the magic of technology has transformed the lives all over the world. You know, we had... We were always a pretty big product over the last year with law firms, but we had this really large uptick in law firms calling us from Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand. And, you know, one day I had asked our customer service people, the next time these law firm from this region calls in, to please grab me, and I'd like to ask them, because, you know, we don't have information about our customers. We don't retain customer names, data, metadata, so that we can't be forced to turn it over. So got on the phone, I introduced myself, and I said, you know, appreciate you buying, sir, and they buy in bulk. And I said, we've had a rash of law firms from this region in the past month buying. Can you tell me, is there something going on? He said, well, what's interesting about where we are in our law firm in this area is that it's legal for law firms to hack each other, and that data can be used in court. It's not inadmissible. So over the last several months, law firms began stocking up on hackers, and the law firm with the best hackers wins. So they've been buying Silent Circle to try to cover their mobile communications. It's absolutely fascinating.
It is really incredible. I mean, this crossover between law and technology, and you know, they used to be at loggerheads. Now I think it's you even have these kind of analogies of the crowbar, the legal crowbar. So the fact that that evidence derived from the exfiltration, the unauthorized exfiltration of data, is actually admissible in court in certain Southeast Asian countries is really incredible. Completely changes the game. But, you know, speaking of legal issues here, I mean, I think it's hard to talk about Silent Circle without also getting into Lava Bit a little bit. You know, and last week, documents were unsealed that basically demonstrated that Ladar Levinson, the founder of Lava Bit, had closed the doors on Lava Bit's accounts because the government was actually demanding. We suspected this, and you suspected that, I'm sure. They were demanding Lavabit's encryption keys, despite Mr. Levinson offering them the kind of more targeted alternative of just focusing on one individual user or several individual users.
Can you just tell us what Lavabit is?
Oh, of course. So, yeah, Mike, do you want to go into Lavabit a little bit, the background of it, because it seems to be an analog to what Silent Circle was?
We're good friends with Ladar, so I feel comfortable in discussing this. You know, Ladar was a email provider who had about 400,000 customers, you know, basically 10, 12 years of his life building this business, and he offered encrypted email capability. Well, as we now know, you know, email is fundamentally broken. So even though the email in transit is encrypted, there are keys held on a server, which means that the holder of that server can be coerced by the government to turn over and decrypt everything. And what we understand is that it's alleged that Snowden was one of his customers, and the government came in force and said, we want everything. And the letter that they gave him basically stated, you know, what in legal jargon, but what they told him was that this letter allows us to take everything, give it all to us. Well, it took him about a week to find a lawyer competent to handle this. And as they reviewed it, that wasn't what the letter said, but they had tried to force him into doing this. They wanted the data on all 400,000 customers, and they wanted to put real-time tap into things. Well, that's not admissible, or that's not allowed, you know, with that type of court order. So what was funny to us about it, a lot of people don't know this, the FBI told him, well, you will go to jail if you don't turn over your master encryption key to the server. So what he did, he had it typed out in something like 72 pages in 4-point font, basically unreadable and unusable, and sent it to them.
Wow.
So then they threatened $10,000 or $5,000 a day every day he didn't turn it over, so he just shut it all down. The amazing thing is that there's a lot that he can't even talk about. Mm-hmm. Not only can these courts force you to do things that aren't necessarily the letter of any law, but they can force you threat of jail time from even mentioning it. So that's a mess.
It's scary what I'm hearing because it's funny. It's great to see somebody show that rebellious spirit. But what this agency is doing, what a series of agencies are doing, is basically chipping away at any remaining freedom. And you had better play ball, or you're going to be in a lot of trouble. That's what we get out of this,
well,
right?
You know, I would say this to that. Although that is very dire, and it is absolutely true, we at least have some sort of systematical approach where we can, you and me, gentlemen, can talk about this in a public forum. The massive scale of global surveillance pales in comparison when you think about that there are 72 NSA-like organizations in the world with $1 billion and more of funding with the exact same mandate and with not as open type of laws and public laws. And then you add onto it the massive corporate, large internet firms, internet technology firms that are robbing your data through what I call app and stupidity surveillance. Literally, you're not the customer. The new gold coming out of the ground is your data, and you're under barrage from everything. So although we talk about this in the shades of the NSA, you know, it's a global issue. Not only is there a $100 billion business in corporate espionage, but there are trillions of dollars in sucking up the data of private citizens and packaging it and reselling it. Anytime you hear freemium or a free service, it's not for free. You're paying with your privacy.
I imagine you're referring to organizations like Google when you say that.
Oh, absolutely. and there's probably about 1,280 of them, to be exact, not to mention, you know, if you want to really know who knows about you, go to the credit card companies. Go to, you want to see a stack of a file on you, you know, go to the credit bureaus, LexisNexis, and these places that package and they deal in the commodity of data.
Well, what do you say to people who there are a lot of them, who say that, well, I'm not doing anything illegal, I have nothing to hide, I don't really care if these people are watching what I'm doing, and it's okay with me if it makes things safer?
Well, first and foremost, you know, that was an easy excuse a year ago. Today, we're hearing a lot different, although you do get people who say that. The fact of the matter is that ounces of their personal privacy are being robbed of them week by week, little by little, siphoned off. And I always tell people, when was the last time you had a phone call with your wife or husband and you did not expect it to be private? Everybody expects that when they pick up the phone and they call, that it's between them and their attorney, their doctor, their loved one. It's literally taking the centuries, thousands of years right of humans to whisper in somebody's ear, to walk out behind the mud hut and have a private conversation. That's gone.
Emmanuel.
So although they, yeah, you know, it's down to that basic primitive human right of the ability to take what's in your head and privately transfer it to somebody else without fear of retribution, imprisonment, or affecting you. Let me give you an example. You take a look at the Moore's Law as its effect in technology. Well, government and big data are compiling everything. I have its school reports, her medical reports. Think about genetics. You know, as her father, if my medical data is compiled by a medical firm and kept in some database, you know, 10, 15 years from now, when she goes to apply to school or a job, they're going to be able to say, well, your insurance premium is 3X because we show your dad had a genetic predisposition to whatever. So it can be used against you. It will be used against you in subtle ways. And we just don't know it.
Emmanuel.
Bernie, go ahead.
What Mike just alluded to, Mike from Silent Circle just alluded to, was pretty compellingly and eloquently expanded on by Ed Snowden in the video that's on one of these USB flash drives we're offering tonight. And Ed Snowden pretty much made it clear that if you think you're one of those people who's got nothing to hide, so you shouldn't have to worry about your privacy, like, who cares, my life is boring, whatever, Ed Snowden said that there are tens of thousands of federal laws in the United States, tens of thousands. And if someone has the ability, the power, to cherry-pick little pieces of information about your life here and there and put together a story that could convince a prosecutor or a jury that you're guilty of violating any one of these tens of thousands of federal laws, your freedom is at risk. That happened to me a few years ago. A law that hadn't been even published in law books yet was used against me, but that's neither here nor there. It's real. It can happen. And if you don't think it can happen, there's plenty of people it has happened to before, and that's why your privacy is important, even if you think you have nothing to hide. So that's why I want to encourage our listeners to support privacy, to support what we're trying to bring to people about what's going on here by calling 516-620-3602, and you can learn more about that.
Yes, if you call that number, and I'm looking at the results so far, maybe we haven't gotten all of them, but we need more people. We need more people to call in to support the radio station. If we're going to have conversations like this in the future, in the very near future, we need a lot of calls. 516-620-3602. What we're offering you tonight is unprecedented. We're offering you all of the leaked NSA documents. If I could have heard myself saying this even 10 years ago, I think I'd be shocked. But basically, yeah, we have a bunch of leaked NSA documents that have been published, and they are now all compiled, put in one place, with the various redactions that journalists have gotten together and agreed upon to really protect security and people's individual identities and things like that. It's not some kind of irresponsible leak that just basically exposes all kinds of innocent people like the intelligence agencies might have you believe. This is what has been revealed to the public. However, it's never really been brought together in one cohesive unit before like this, certainly not as cohesive as a thumb drive. 516-620-3602, a pledge of $75 gets you all of the NSA leaked documents from Edward Snowden, including his video interview, and a pledge of $125 gets you that plus a plethora of WikiLeaks documents, hundreds of thousands that have been released since 2008, having to do with the Iraq War, having to do with the Afghan War, having to do with all kinds of abuses of freedom. On the WikiLeaks thumb drive, for instance, we have the Afghan War Diary, which we said was more than 70,000 Afghan War Log entries. The Iraq War Logs from 2004 to 2009, about 400,000 log entries from the Iraq War, more than 2,000 secret U.S. Embassy cables known as Cablegate. And I believe that goes all the way back to 1966 into 2010. Both the full 39-minute and the shorter analysis version of the collateral murder video that reveals the murder of journalists by U.S. armed forces. You also get, this is kind of interesting, the insurance file that's meant to protect WikiLeaks in the event it's taken down by the authorities. And if the day comes when WikiLeaks has no other option, that password will be given out and this file will reveal all kinds of sensitive information. Pretty exciting. James Bond stuff here. It's all yours. Pledge of $125, you get everything. But you got to call now, 516-620-3602. I'm very disappointed by what I'm seeing so far because I expected the phones to fly off the hook and for all kinds of people to be taking advantage of this unprecedented offer. I know it's scary. I know it's frightening because you are actually pledging for something that that federal agencies really wish that you would not do, but it's also a voice of support for freedom of information and for those courageous people that risk their lives to expose wrongdoing, to expose information that Americans and citizens worldwide have every right to know. 516-620-3602. Again, two pledge levels, 75 and 125. You'll basically have a volunteer on the other end that will help you out. Just ask for either the WikiLeaks and NSA thumb drive package, or if you just want the WikiLeaks thumb drive or the NSA thumb drive, indicate that. It's all about thumb drives, but really it's all about information. Information is power, and that's what keeps us going here at Off the Hook. 516-620-3602. Rob.
And if for some reason you don't want your copy of the WikiLeaks files or the Edward Snowden files, that's okay. You can still support us. You can still support the station and the show by calling 516-620-3602 or by going to WBAI.org. There are some other premiums up there that the station has for you to choose from. And most importantly, the biggest premium is the station itself and your membership in it. And that's what this fundraiser is really all about. So
yeah, you know, it's WBAI is really the only station that will, in the same breath, offer you leaked NSA documents or maybe a coffee mug. which would you prefer? It's up to you. You make the final choice as far as that goes. But it all goes to the same place, and it all keeps us on the air. And just think of all the ideas and controversy that have come forth over our airwaves concerning everything in the world, including ourselves. 516-620-3602. I really think it's a place worthy of support, worthy of preservation, and a place like no other, because you won't find this kind of thing. And nobody would dare to talk about this or to offer these kinds of things. So that reason alone, 516-620-3602. Yes, Alex.
You know, and I think when you're supporting the station, you're also supporting the kind of shenanigans that Mike Jahnke had just mentioned to us with regard to the production of the encryption key in a four-point font. I mean, this reminds me it's a very, very similar story, I think, to what 2600 did about 13 years ago in a DCSS case. Mm-hmm. It was very, very similar where those of the listeners that don't remember this, there was an injunction that was imposed upon 2600 that prevented them from linking to a site that contained the source code for DCSS, which was the decontent scrambling system, which allowed you to decrypt the the Monument to Stupidity type encryption algorithm that was protecting DVDs. Am I getting this right?
Except I want to make it clear that it wasn't protecting DVDs against copying or piracy or anything like that. It was
That's
protecting
right.
DVDs against being played on quote-unquote unauthorized players. In
That's
other
right.
words, the Linux operating system was not allowed to play DVDs. And what the DECSS program written by Johansson from Norway did was basically allow you to play it on the operating system of your choice. It was that simple, and it just showed that these people that want to control things, they're most worried by that loss of control. Not necessarily piracy or people copying things. They want to be able to tell you where you can watch something, how you can watch it, all kinds of rules and regulations and control. And since then, we have seen that skyrocket in almost every single imaginable field.
And most importantly, it also controlled whether or not you had to watch the ads that were otherwise mandatory. So if you were watching with DECSS, you could skip past the ads that if you put your DVD in a regular player, you would have to sit in front of and watch without any choice. And I think that's really where a lot of the anger behind that whole thing came from.
Yeah, unfortunately, we lost the case. We've seen all kinds of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act used in so many different variations ever since. We've seen so much control of technology and everything from automobiles to DVD players to anything you can think of that's technologically based is being controlled somehow. And there are certain rules and regulations on how you may do something. You don't own the content. You're only leasing it. You're only agreeing to their terms temporarily, and then you have to buy it again.
You guys got off on such a tangent, you didn't even let me get to the punchline here.
That's right, yeah, the punchline.
The punchline was that, so the injunction prevented Emmanuel and 2600 from actually linking to this particular source code, so they just kind of parsed the language a little bit and removed the hyperlinks and then kept the text to the link up there. And that caused a bit of what we would call, you know, off the air, a legal doo-doo storm in the courtroom.
Well, I mean, basically, and that sort of speaks to what Michael was saying before, what we did was, instead of having links, we had a list. We just had a list. And the intention was, okay, we're not allowed to have links. Tell us we're not allowed to have a list. Then we'll just put it in conversational speech. Then we'll be told we're not allowed to speak about it. You know, basically pushing it further and further and further until we're not allowed to even think about it. Fortunately, it didn't get to that stage. We were allowed to have the list. They didn't push back on that. The judge did not rule against us on that particular battle, but we did lose the case. I think, though, we got the word out, and that's the important thing, is just being able to talk about this and spread the information. And so many people learned about Digital Millennium Copyright Act from that case back in 2000, and I think that was more important.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie?
And continuing that point, maybe an even more relevant connection pertaining to encryption and Phil Zimmerman and PGP, I think some of us probably recall a few years before the DCMA case, or DMCA case, when it was a federal crime to export encryption programs like PGP, a bunch of hackers realized that it's not illegal to export printed text. So they printed the code out for PGP, took it overseas, and then manually at an outdoor hacker camp conference, manually transcribed like thousands and thousands of lines of code, and reconstructed the program overseas, and then it was out. I mean, it was already been out. It was kind of from a practical standpoint, it didn't accomplish anything, but it proved that the government's attempts to criminalize the export of encryption software like this was futile. And then the government pretty much dropped the case, and Phil Zimmerman was off the hook. How many of us remember that?
That's such a great story, and there's so many tangential lines off of that. How hard they came at him with the full force of the Justice Department, and ultimately Phil prevailed. And we now have everything from in encryption in your ATM machine to everything in life. 10 years ago, if you were walking around and you had encryption on your laptop or something, people would ask, what do you got to hide? Well, today, if you don't have encryption, people say, what are you, stupid? You know, everything we touch today, from buying online to online banking to your ATM to, you know, your Visa, your passport, everything has encryption. So the government always looks in the past instead of what can be in the future. And I think we're at that kind of event horizon as it relates to privacy and you know, our mobile and data lives where, you know, on some levels, I don't fault the NSA. They're like, on some levels, like a wild animal. They're programmed to do what they do. And if there's no leash, well, it's going to run rampant. Ever since 9/11, you know, the Patriot Act was really a social contract between the citizens and the government to suspend some of our rights for a short term to do what needed to be done. Well, that suspension has never stopped, and in fact, it's been increasing and increasing until you wake up one day and your entire freedoms as they relate to privacy are gone. So, you know, I don't want suicide bombers on the street just as much as somebody else does, but we've gone, you know, 100x beyond that need to basically worldwide surveillance of everything all the time, every data bit of every human. And the hard part about this, gentlemen, is if you could show me a single time in the point of history where when government ever granted itself a power that it's ever rolled it back. So, you know, you've got folks in Silicon Valley, big tech firms and governments around the world with their head down hoping this blows over. I don't think it will, but I also don't have a lot of faith in, you know, societies that get their politics from 10-second sound bites on CNN. So I don't know how it'll end up, but you got to push back. And it's not just against our government. It's worldwide. You fly anywhere. You try to do business anywhere in the world. The minute you turn on anything electronic, you're owned.
Michael Janke from Silent Circle, I really want to thank you for being part of the program tonight and for your inspirational words, if not very scary words. But I think there's hope out there if we stay awake and we stay alert and we communicate amongst each other and we figure out ways to communicate securely and keep the prying eyes from watching us.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care. That was Michael Janke from Silent Circle. Very interesting guy and somebody that I think is playing an important part in all of this. We are going to continue for another hour, a special two-hour edition of Off the Hook here on WBAI New York, the Personal Computer Show. We'll be back next week with their two-hour special. We need you to call in. We do not have nearly enough phone calls. And for what we're offering, I am shocked. I'm shocked by, well, maybe people just aren't entering the information fast enough, but I don't want to blame the people in the call center. We can't see them. They're in a different place. And we can't see the phones ringing live. The old system, we could see the phone calls coming in, so we could tell when we strike a chord with people. And I just feel like we should be striking a chord with people because what we were offering tonight is simply something so exciting and different and rebellious that I don't know who could resist calling. Of course, it's kind of frightening. Yeah, you might think that if you call up, your name's going to be put on a list and the NSA will come visit you. Yeah, you know, it's not quite that cloak and dagger at this stage, I don't think. And plus, the more people who call in and take advantage of this amazing offer for the leaked NSA documents or the WikiLeaks documents or both of them together on a thumb drive, the more that information is out there. That is your way of helping to spread the information around, to keep a copy someplace. Imagine if all the copies somehow got taken off the internet and you still had your thumb drive. Imagine that power, that satisfaction of knowing that you're keeping the freedom of information, that those values a little bit more safe just by having a copy. How many times have you lost something electronic that, whether it's pictures or some kind of reading material, because you kept it on a computer, you forgot where you put it, it's on some other drive, you thought it was backed up, but it wasn't. Well, in this particular way, you have a thumb drive that you can always plug into a computer and copy it and share it. And you can be the most popular person on your block with this information, the most respected person, perhaps. 516-620-3602. Pledge of $125 gets you all the WikiLeaks and NSA documents that we've been talking about tonight. Pledge of $75 gets you either one. But we need those calls to start pouring in. 516-620-3602. I know, Bernie, you're always good at getting the calls to come in.
Well, I don't know. I think my appeal may be wearing out, but I just want to tell our listeners that this is not just an idle request. This radio station, WBAI, is literally on its last legs if this fund drive does not do well. I know there's been a lot of hyperbole in the past, but this is the real deal. The station needs to pay its $50,000 a month to rent space for its transmitter atop the Empire State Building, that massive antenna up there that we use to breach the signal to four different states and get out to the rest of the world over the internet. This is key. This station has very few paid employees. None of us get paid a dime. We donate all our time and goods to this station to keep this worthwhile resource on the air. So please call 516-620-3602. We have an amazing premium that's unprecedented. There is no radio station in the country that is offering this as something you can get.
Yeah, I would like to see another radio station try this. Certainly not in New York. Nobody has the guts to try this, right? BAI is always leading as far as doing something cutting edge. And I think offering leaked NSA documents, that's cutting edge enough for me. 516-620-3602. Be a part of that. This is history. They will write books about this someday. And you can say, yeah, I was there. I was a part of it. I helped WBAI stay on the air. 516-620-3602.
So we know that secrets are kind of obsolete. So I'm going to share with the audience a secret of mine, which is that I really actually don't enjoy coming on the air and asking you to donate. But the only alternative is that we have to ask someone else for money. The transmitter is expensive to run. And the people who would give us money, there are people who would give us money if we would, you know, say the name of their product or service on the air. There's lots of such people, and we could hire salespeople and get them. But then we would lose our editorial independence. The sorts of people who would want to advertise on this program are the sorts of services that we want to critique on this program, and we would not be able to critique a service if we rely on it to stay on the air. So we'd much rather annoy ourselves a bit, annoy you a bit, and ask you for money. Call 516-620-3602 because it is the only way we can retain our editorial independence. So one thing that will really help, we've mentioned before this BAI Buddy program. You can call, you donate a small amount of money, say $10 every month, and the money just, comes to WBI, so we don't have to ask you for it every month, and you don't have to give us a whole bunch of money all at once. And it will really allow us to reduce the amount of time we have to spend fundraising, and it will allow us to, you know, feel a little bit secure in our future. So if that's interesting to you, give us a call, 516-620-3602, and say, I want to join the BAI Buddy program. If you feel like your finances are a bit uncertain or you just don't want to do that, you feel like the quality of our program is a bit uncertain and you don't want to commit to funding us in advance, that's fine. You can give a lump sum donation, and we have all these premiums that we've discussed. Again, the number 516-620-3602, but your support is what lets us stay on the air and what lets us say what we want on the air.
That's right, 516-620-3602. Mike is struggling through, sounds like you got some kind of cold there, and flu is it maybe, or something contagious?
Whatever I have is a small stew, you're going to have it next
yeah,
week.
Yeah, I know, and we're all accepting that sacrifice, you know, that risk of contagious diseases that we will gladly share with each other just because we want to come in here and keep this place on the air. It's so important to make whatever sacrifice you can. And well put, Mike, because that is important to show support for this place, to keep this voice on the air. You don't know what you have until it's gone, and things are always in danger of disappearing. This place is in danger of disappearing. I don't like to cry wolf. I have not said that very often, but I have seen a lot of things that have been happening, and we are at risk. And the one thing that will pull us out of that, the one thing that indisputably will get us through these dark periods, is a strong showing from our listeners. Now, I know that there are many things on the radio that are controversial, or maybe things that are distasteful to you, things that you don't like on WBAI. And that's fine. You know, there are things on WBAI I don't like. There are things everybody doesn't like at some point or another during the broadcast day. Think about the things you do like. And if there is something on this radio station, and it might very well be this program since you happen to be listening to it, is that not reason enough to keep the radio station going, to vote for that and to say, I want more of this? Well, you very well might get more of that if you call in, 516-620-3602. But one thing that is for sure is if you don't call in, and if other people don't call in, you won't get any more of this or the things you don't like. It's that simple. It's a very basic form of economics, probably the only form I understand, that if you don't have money to pay your bills, you can't keep operating. And we need to reach that level, and we can reach that level. This particular fund drive is a little different. You might have noticed it's got a different sound to it. We're not offering as many premiums throughout the broadcast day. This is something that we worked long and hard on to basically collect, put together. And it doesn't cost a huge amount of, we don't have to buy books or videos or things like that. This is data that we can put on a thumb drive. And basically the fundraiser this time is not focusing so much on those items that the station has to invest in. Therefore, the actual goal of the fundraiser is less than the goal of previous fundraisers because that expense isn't there. And I think that's actually a better way to do a fundraiser, because then people are calling in because they really want to support the radio station, not because they want to get a bargain, not because it's the Shop at Home network. That's not what we want to be. We want to be a voice of relevance, of controversy, something that will make you think. And if the premium you call up for, like the NSA leaked documents, like the WikiLeaks documents, if that is something that excites you, that makes you think, then you're calling for a very good reason. You're supporting the radio station. You're getting something that makes you think in exchange. And it's basically one hand washing the other. We all benefit from this. Of course, the intelligence community, they might be a little cranky about it for a while. But you know what? I think they're going to get over it just fine. I think there's plenty more secrets for them to keep hold of. And of course, there's all the spying on us that they don't want us to know about, which I think that's hilarious, because whenever you reveal anything about the people who spy on you, they get indignant. But you're not supposed to get indignant that you're being spied upon. That is incredible irony to me. So for a pledge of $125, you can get as much of the information that they don't want you to have as I think humanly possible right now. 516-620-3602. For a pledge of $75, you can get just the NSA documents or just the WikiLeaks documents. 516-620-3602. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to have another hero of all of this on the airwaves live to share some more stories. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this important announcement.
Hey, Tom Hartman here. WBAI is important. Radio for the 99%. Unlike commercial radio, WBAI does not have rich corporations as sponsors, no deep well of corporate support to keep them on the air. But they do have something better. You, the listeners and members of WBAI. You are our sponsors and our community. WBAI can't do it without you. Please help keep this honored and beloved station on the air. You won't find movement politics and social justice anywhere else on the radio. We can't do this without you. I'm here for you. WBAI is here for you. Please donate now. Call 516-620-3602 or go to give2wbai.org with the digit 2 in there. Give number 2, wbai.org.
Tune in weeknights at 9 p.m. for Tom Hartman on WBAI.
Thank you.
It's odd that they, the enemy, believe that we're stronger than we know or think we are, right? The other part of the equation is that they believe that people who watch it on TV or watch it in the movie theater or read this book will do nothing. So it's safe. It's safe to put this out to the American people. They're so sure of that because they know that they have dumbed down and numbed out the minds of the American public to such an extent that once TV Nation or The Awful Truth or Roger Me is over, people can just turn the dial, go to Everybody Loves Raymond, and not think about it anymore. Now, I've always believed something different. I believe that this will actually grow to be something very large because the American people are, at their core, good. And they have good hearts, and they have good souls, and they have a conscience.
Tune in this October for the Voices of WBAI, a membership drive with a difference. Pacifica Radio, a unique voice in New York City for more than 50 years. 99.5 FM and online at WBAI.org.
And you are listening to an extended edition of Off the Hook on this Wednesday evening. The Personal Computer Show will be back next week with its two-hour special beginning at 7 p.m. But tonight it's us until 9 p.m. And if you missed it, we are offering an incredible premium, 516-620-3602. We are offering all of the NSA leaked documents from Edward Snowden that have been revealed so far, and we're offering them all in one very small, compact device known as a thumb drive, and I don't believe this has ever been done before. 516-620-3602. For $75, that's all yours, and if you want the real package with hundreds of thousands of WikiLeaks documents thrown in, a pledge of $125 will get you that. 516-620-3602. We are seeing a number of people call in, and that's great, but we need a lot more. If you want to keep this place alive, what better way to voice your support than to pledge and get some leaked documents in exchange? I think it's just, it's marvelous. It really is. And it gives me hope that, we just might make it after all. I was on one of my favorite websites earlier today, and of course that site is cryptome.org. And actually there was something on it that I think deserves to be shared with people, if I can find it. I printed it out before. This is a statement by Chelsea Manning that was revealed today, that was shared today. I'm still looking for it. It's around someplace. Hang on. It's there it is. No, that's not it. That's another story. How do I lose so many papers? It's incredible. All right. Well, you know what I can do? I can go to the website and
Emmanuel,
go ahead, Barney.
I can probably bring it up here. I'm opening the document.
Okay, please do. Yes, that's the amazing part of the internet. I'll keep looking for it while you
Cryptome, that's cryptome.org. is an amazing website that's been up for, probably 20 years or so. And we all use it as a resource here on Off the Hook, and I think a lot of other news media outlets use it as well. But it doesn't get nearly the attention that it deserves. There's a lot of key information there, and John Young, who runs it, is an amazing person for volunteering to do all that work.
And you know why I couldn't find it, Bernie, is because I didn't print it. I put it on my laptop, so I'm holding my laptop here.
You should have put it on your flash drive, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have. This is how quickly you can lose things. See, we're demonstrating it unintentionally here, folks. You can lose things so easily, so it's good to have everything together. But Bernie, I would just like to read this because I think it's important. It's a statement for public release, and basically it comes from Chelsea Manning, formerly known as Bradley Manning. Unfortunately, I'm very concerned about a substantial disconnect I discovered between what I've experienced in the last few weeks and what's occurred in the rest of the world since my arrival at the U.S. disciplinary barracks in August. Unfortunately, I've been largely left out of the loop on the details about what's been occurring over the last several weeks. This partly due to my limited contact with the outside world during the in-processing phase of my arrival, but it's also because I've been trying to decompress and focus on other things after a lengthy and exhausting court-martial process. The most obvious disconnect I discovered has to do with the 2013 Sean McBride Peace Award that was supposedly accepted on my behalf by Ms. Anne Wright, a retired colonel in the U.S. Army. I say supposedly because I had absolutely no idea I received this award, let alone accepted it. In fact, I first found out about the award when I began receiving mail containing quotes from Ms. Wright's acceptance speech. Now, please don't get me wrong. I'm absolutely flattered and honored to receive this award, or any award for that matter. But I was shocked and frustrated about what's occurred here, that it seems that I've been left out of the process. And to make matters worse, now there exists the possibility that there might be more false impressions out there in regards to how I feel about the award, how it ties to my actions in 2010, and who I am. For example, Ms. Wright states that when I was told by my lawyer, Mr. David Coombs, that IPB, International Peace Bureau, has selected me as a recipient of this year's award. I was overwhelmed that such an organization would recognize my actions as actions for peace. There are a few issues with this sentence. A, the conversations I've had with Mr. Coombs have been somewhat brief and heavily focused on the common legal and logistical minutiae that needs to be worked out after a large court-martial. There's little room in our scheduled time set by the U.S. disciplinary barracks for discussion of anything not focused on the authentication of court-martial documents and transcripts or my ongoing request for a gender dysphoria treatment plan that follows recognized medical standards. B, from my perspective at least, it's not terribly clear to me that my actions were explicitly done for peace. I don't consider myself a pacifist, anti-war, or especially a conscientious objector. Now, I accept that there may be peaceful or anti-war implications to my actions, but this is purely based on your subjective interpretation of the primary source documents released in 2010 to 2011. I believe that it is also perfectly reasonable to subjectively interpret these documents and come to the opposite opinion and say, hey, look at these documents. They clearly justify this war or diplomatic discussion or detention of an individual. This is precisely the reason why I avoided overbroad and unnecessary redactions on my end while providing and attempting to provide these documents to media organizations in early 2010. I'm a transparency advocate. I feel that the public cannot decide what actions and policies are or are not justified if they don't even know the most rudimentary details about them and their effects. In the next sentence, Ms. Wright says that I know the history of the McBride Award. Well, as embarrassed as I am to admit this, I don't. In fact, I only learned of his existence in the last few days. I certainly know who Sean McBride is and what Amnesty International is. I even vaguely know what the IPB is, but I had no idea of the award's existence. I simply don't know what's happened here. I absolutely don't believe that there was a conspiracy or any bad intentions on anyone's part, but whatever has happened, I don't believe it's productive, and I believe it would be totally dishonest if I don't make the public aware of this disconnection. So, to avoid any disconnection or miscommunication in the future, all of my official statements and position coming from me shall be in the form of a signed letter or release, similar to this one, with my letterhead and date at the top of the first page and my signature at the bottom of the last page. Statements or positions filtered through my attorney or other representatives should be considered unofficial unless they deal with purely legal issues and positions or they are accompanied by a signed official letter or release. And lastly, I'd like to clarify that as far as I'm concerned, I no longer have any rank. While I still have a pay grade of E1 with total forfeitures of pay, I do not have an associated rank while in confinement. I prefer to use Ms. or no title instead of using SPC, PFC, PVT, or other military titles. And I'd like to thank everyone who has avoided misgendering me and switched to using my new name and feminine pronouns. Thank you, Chelsea Manning. And I'd also like to give the address, because I know a lot of people might want to send something. And I believe the address has to remain Bradley Manning because of the confinement. So for now, you would write to Bradley E. Manning, 89289, and the address 1300 North Warehouse Road, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, 66027-2304. And I'm sure Chelsea would appreciate all the all support and just knowing what's going on in the world, because being confined is really a horrible, horrible thing. Anyway, this particular document is what I saw on cryptom.org today. And as Bernie mentioned, that is CRYPTOME.org, incredible site with all kinds of documents exposed and information that will make you more educated and aware of what's happening in the world. And we have the guy who runs Krypton.org, who started it all here in our studios. And I refer to him as a hero because I believe that's what he is. John Young, welcome to WBAI.
Glad to be here.
Well, tell us something about when Krypton started and what you had in mind, and are you surprised at where it is now?
It was started in 1996, thanks to Cypherpunks, a mailless group. And we set it up to provide an archive of documents that people were not willing to put up in their own name. And so we decided to do that as a public service, and that's still what we do primarily, is provide documents.
And you've been threatened a number of times for putting up these documents, have you not?
Yes.
And how, for those people that might be new to this, as far as doing something controversial, dealing with leaked information, spreading it to the public, what would you say to them as far as standing up to authority?
Well, it's what citizens do. The basic definition of a citizen is to defy authority in all forms. And so if you don't defy authority, then you don't get the privileges of citizenship.
Yeah, I think that definitely... That definitely says it, and reading that piece by Chelsea Manning, I felt the same thing. What she was saying about releasing information, being in favor of transparency, letting people decide for themselves. That is something that I think we take for granted way too much these days. We assume someone else is going to do it for us. And nobody takes the stand. And when you do take the stand, you're subjected to unimaginable penalties, and other people are scared into not doing anything. But at the same time, others are inspired to do more. And I think that's what we've seen in the case of Edward Snowden and the leakers of the future. I believe there are many leakers of the future, both corporate and governmental, that we are going to see.
That's correct. There have been hundreds have appeared since we set up in 1996. Mm-hmm. We have a list of them. There are several hundred people leaking information these days. WikiLeaks is just one among these several hundred. Many of them you don't know about, and that's great. You don't need to be known about. Just get the information out there. We think that's actually better than to have a centralized repository. We think the more people that are out there doing this, the safer we all are, so that no single site can be taken down. And that is what the authorities would like to have, easy targets or centralized repositories of information.
I think what you've done is really worthy of note, because you've managed, the headlines don't focus on Krypton all that often. There aren't movies about Krypton coming out, but you guys have survived. You guys keep doing what you've been doing since 1996. And do you attribute that to having lots of different sources?
Yeah, in fact, 90% of what we publish that's controversial comes from other people. We dig up some non-controversial stuff ourselves, but the most interesting stuff comes in from anonymous sources.
Now, let's say there is an anonymous source out there listening right now. How would they send you something?
Well, just about any way that you can think of. We've got a paper up on how you can do it anonymously, and it will probably scare people away, but it's actually hard to do anonymous contributions these days, particularly via the Internet, because it's just a huge spying machine. We actually recommend that you not use the Internet to communicate in any form whatsoever. And that you, in fact, a few days ago, I had a lunch with someone from EFF who handles security for EFF. And I said, it's time to go back to 2600 and consult what they're doing. They've got means and methods that you folks are not aware of because you're completely obsessed with the Internet. It's about the worst system that's ever been invented for spying on the public, and that most people think that it's just a wonderful machine for pleasure and education, when in fact it tracks everything we all do. And so we think that your thumb drive motion is a brilliant solution. We think there should be more thumb drives, more letters, more face-to-face, and just gradually wind down use of the Internet completely. Because right now, commerce and government is using it to exploit us all, and we think we need to go back to radio, thumb drives, mail, face-to-face, couriers. Don't forget that everyone we've been talking about tonight, Manning, Snowden, WikiLeaks, all the good people did it by sneaker net. They did not trust the Internet. The military does not trust the Internet. No one who's serious about communication uses the Internet for communication. And so that if you use it, you are going to be tracked meticulously. And so I think that your thumb drive is a brilliant move. We, in fact, encourage EFF to move away from Internet obsession and to look at some of the older technologies and methodologies that ordinary people can use without needing a computer or ISP or any kind of service like that. Encryption does not work. That is part of the scam.
All right, we'll get into that in a second, but now you mentioned sneaker net. Is there a particular definition to that?
You just walk.
That's it, okay.
Manning walked out with his DVD. Snowden walked out with his laptops. Copies have been distributed by SneakerNet. They did not use any Internet means to distribute that among people. We would like to see more people using thumb drives for distribution. Of course, while there are mail spy programs, you can walk this over to someone. And you should learn to walk and get away from the computer. And I think a thumb drive is a great tool.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say this, John, because, you know, in the information security circles, there's a lot of talk in, you know, in what Mike Jahnke has termed the summer of Snowden and post-Snowden about these insider threats. And Snowden and Chelsea Manning, and anybody who walks away with data is considered an insider. And so there are these technological methods that have been developed, certain software suites known as data loss prevention, that try to wall off data or try to prevent you from doing certain things with data, printing it, sending it, moving it from one network share to another, that kind of thing. But you mentioned the sneaker net, because none of this software could ever prevent somebody from very, very simple tradecraft, like they used to do in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and probably still today, which is you have something on the screen or you have a piece of paper there, take a picture of it, and walk out with it. No software can stop you from using the sneaker net. So I think it's an interesting thing that you mentioned, and you also mentioned a central repository of data, and this is what governments want. And we're starting to see governments misusing these Snowden revelations and misusing these revelations about the extent of U.S. surveillance to try to wall off their own data. So we had Brazil a couple of weeks ago. They made a proposal to wall off the data that flows from internet exchange point to internet exchange point within Brazil, and to keep it all nationalized within Brazil's borders, this sort of balkanization of data within Brazil. And what does this create? It creates a central repository of data. Maybe more difficult for foreign intelligence agencies to get into that data and track it, possibly. But what does it do for the Brazilians? It makes it a hell of a lot easier to be spied on by the Brazilian governments. So I think it's important that we don't let this data that Snowden has revealed be misused by governments as well.
Well, I think one way to not misuse it is for people to take it and have it for themselves. And you can do that by calling 516-620-3602, pledging your support, and getting a Snowden thumb drive in return with all the NSA documents on it. 516-620-3602. Ask for the NSA thumb drive, or ask for the WikiLeaks thumb drive, or ask for the NSA and WikiLeaks thumb drive for a pledge of $125. 516-620-3602. Be a part of this. And you'll feel really good. You'll be supporting the radio station and also plunging right into the middle of all this and seeing for yourself what it is that folks like John Young are talking about right now. And, John, I wanted to ask you, as far as basically the surveillance that we find on the Internet, how much of that is because people just give it all away themselves? They say where they are at all times. They're tweeting. They're posting on Facebook. They basically are revealing all their personal information, and it seems to me like that's something the government would just love, because it makes it so easy for them.
Well, one of the things that's not commonly known is that throughout history, spies have been assisted by commerce. They need commerce to do spying, and same here. The NSA could not do what it's doing without the assistance of people who invent and promulgate this technology. And more spying is done in the world by commerce than by all the intelligence agencies combined. They call it data gathering. Educational institutions gather it and siphon it, launder it, and sell it to the spy agencies. And so this kind of blaming of NSA is actually a diversion from the ones who are actually doing the spying. And that is what is being done very effectively right now. Of course, NSA can't say that. But Snowden revealed just a tip of how many corporations are actually helping NSA do the spying. They can't do it by themselves. The entire infrastructure of the Internet is run by commerce, not by the government. And they do that for money. And so that we have been lulled into thinking that the Internet is a wonderful machine, when in fact it's a way to spy on us. And I like to use the word spy rather than data gathering or opinion polling or all that, because I think that they don't want the word spy used against them. But I think that's what it is. Scholars are doing it. Commerce is doing it. Individuals are doing it. Hackers are doing it. Lawyers are doing it. Architects are doing it. And they all say, we can't believe our good luck. The Russian mafia never had it so good.
The architects of the Internet, I think, had no idea what it would turn into, and the value it would, the role it would take in society. And when people like you and like our previous guest mentioned things like email is not safe, it was never meant to be safe. The original web was not built to keep anything really secret. The original protocols are not just didn't have that built into them. What do you think? Do you think that there's anywhere to go from here to be safe? Like, can we create email 2.0 and build safety into it somehow and have that as accepted as email is today among the mainstream?
Well, there is an initiative now to redesign the internet. Turns out it's being run by the same people who designed the first one. So we should not expect radical change. That in the end, we have to find a way to start over. These folks are too locked into their own way of thinking. And they do like control. It's called technological control. And, of course, law follows the technological control. And so it almost reminds me of the invention of nuclear weapons. Those folks actually thought they knew more than anyone else and that no one knows how to do this better than us. And so that kind of arrogance is what's going to keep them from doing a trustworthy system. They think they are the most trustworthy people in the world, just like the nuclear scientists. They're not. They're wrong. They don't know the harm they're causing, and they're blinded by vanity and pride. And so I think that we have to be skeptical of the experts, whether it's encryption or whether it's running of the Internet. I think we have to be aware of the fact they have a stake in this. They're actually making a good bit of money off of it. And so I think we need to find a way to communicate among ourselves without their assistance. Now, this is back to defying authority. We think all forms of authority should be defied, particularly authorities on the Internet and COMSEC. But that's because it's human nature to cheat. And so that I think those who want to run things should be suspected.
Now, you mentioned earlier that encryption doesn't work, and I imagine that's what you're saying here, is that people who design these things have their own agenda, and they cheat, and they make shortcuts, or they have other alliances, and you can't really trust anyone unless you know exactly what it is they're doing. Is that, do I have it right as far
well,
as that goes?
If you subscribe to the crypto discussionists, they admit this. They say that while the math may be secure, the implementation is always faulty, and they're always trying to tweak it to make it a little bit better. And so that they're as much a quandary as we are. And so they keep hawking that we can make it better, we can make it better, we apologize. And so throughout our experience with it, they've always apologized for screwing up, but say that's the best we could do. The market required it. We had to get it out the door, i.e. we had to make some money. The best ones say, don't make promises. They do not make promises to the public. In fact, they say, we're embarrassed at what we said 10 years ago to the public. We didn't know what we were saying. Because the really good people do not go out and make these kind of rash promises of security. Now, they're talking about this openly, and they're very embarrassed at what NSA has come out with. They thought they were on top of things. They can't believe how stupid they were. And they're admitting this, and they're almost in a crisis mode right now. And many of these cryptolists won't talk about politics. They say, we have to restrict ourselves to technology. And, of course, they got beat politically. And that's why we think cypherpunks like 2600 has the right approach. You cannot walk away from politics, and you can't walk away from technology.
But, John, you know, what would you say to the politicians who have made the argument, well, you know, there are all these negative implications of the technologies that have been developed and are being developed, but they're foreseeable, and we have rules to prevent things from going haywire. You know, the stifling of political dissent, you know, won't actually happen because nobody's going to misuse this data because we've had, you know, our lawyers. This is General Alexander's argument, basically, that there were lawyers within the NSA, there were lawyers within, you know, every single intelligence agency, within the White House, within the Department of Justice, within the Department of Defense, that all of these lawyers have okayed the program, and that these programs were then ratified once again by a federal court. And so we have these rules and we have these systems in place to prevent them from going awry. So what would you say to them?
I'd say they're lying. And Baker in particular lies. These lawyers in these agencies are trained to lie. That's their purpose. They lie to the public. Bald-faced lies. And that is what intelligence people do. They are trained to lie to the public. They're trained to engage in criminal activity without accountability. And this is why it has to be kept secret, the fact that they're lying to the public and they're lying to Congress and they're lying to the president. Turns out this is such a historical way of operating, they think it's okay.
And do you think they don't even know that they're lying?
they don't call it that. They call it the best we can do.
They twist it around, yeah.
Yeah, well, but of course, that's what liars always do. Liars never admit to lying. You have to call them out. That's why I call them spies. Spies are trained to lie. And the ones who are honest about it say, that's right, that's what we do. Now, you may remember that a few of these ex-directors of these agencies have admitted that after leaving office. That's why it's comical to hear this MI5 guy lie in his teeth. And so Alexander's lying. All the people in office right now are lying about what they're doing. That's what they're paid to do. And so, but watch what they say after they're out. And many of the British ex-spies are saying, well, that's right, we did abuse. We did make a mistake. We got to have a public discussion. But not while they're in office. They can't say that.
You know, and I think another response to the question that I posed is to say, look, there have already been incidents where this data has been misused. I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we talked about this ridiculous thing called LoveInt, right, where NSA analysts were literally using the metadata or data that was collected and spying on their ex-girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there are methods. I mean, we know, and I don't remember the statistics, but I think we talked about them several weeks ago about the sheer number of errors there were. But so there these things have already gone haywire to an extent. And I think to go back to what Mike Janke had said earlier was, you know, look at the powers that governments have granted to themselves, and they've never rolled it back. They've never rolled it back. But then you take Obama's position. It would be very, very difficult, I think, to be a president and to be granted all of these legal authorities and the power to do certain things to supposedly combat the war on terror. And if something happened on his watch and he didn't use all the powers that were at his disposal to stop whatever it was he could have stopped, you know, then he's really in a lot of hot water, I think, politically and historically. So do we share any responsibility, in your opinion, John, for giving the president these powers? I mean, there was a FISA Amendments Act of 2008. There was the Patriot Act. All of these laws are passed by Congress, and Congresses are supposedly the embodiment of our political will as a nation. So do we share responsibility in this mess?
Well, we do as citizens, and I think that we have to have the guts to say, well, we need to stop the entrapment of presidents and Congress by secrecy agreements, that they can only have access to the secrets if they agree for a lifetime to never reveal them. Therefore, once they're in, there's no way out, and we citizens have to break that logjam. They cannot do it. And so it's an interesting system that's been brought up to read people into the world of secrecy, and they can, for their lifetime, they can never reveal everything they know. That's why you never find an ex-spy. They're always still under a lifetime secrecy agreement. And so that's why Snowden is such an unusual case here. He's actually a contractor. But if you were an official member of one of these spy agencies, you could not do what he did. And that's why, while I respect a number of the ex-spies, they do not reveal everything they know, and they're careful to say that, because they can be severely penalized if they do, much more than Snowden can be.
We're talking with the legendary John Young from Cryptome.org. I say legendary because you have inspired many, many people, and I think many, many websites, and people who really want to reveal information and spread truth to fellow citizens, world citizens, and all kinds of people like that with the Cryptome.org website and your other speaking engagements and words that just simply inspire people. I'd like to ask you, though, John, who inspired you to do this, to get involved to this level, to do this kind of thing?
Well, cypherpunks. Mm-hmm. Everyone know who cypherpunks is? This strange group set up in 1992. Of engineers, scientists, cryptographers, all sorts of people set up this mail list.
But you're not saying cyberpunks, you're saying cypherpunks.
That's right. It's all about cryptography. And that I think that it's still one of the most significant things that came out of the Internet, and it's still alive and kicking and obstreperous and hard to get along with. Now, what's happened, though, is a number of people broke away from it to set up other cryptography lists that are much less political, much less controversial. And that it takes a gut to do what cyberpunks are doing. They're still there.
They are still around because we don't hear as much from them as we used to back in the 90s. Maybe they're just off the grid a little bit?
They are off the grid, and they're working on stuff that is very effective.
All right. As I said, we're talking with John Young from Cryptome.org, and we're also talking to you, our listeners out there in radio land. We're appealing to you to help this radio station stay on the air with conversations like this. We've been talking about the Edward Snowden leaks. We've been talking about NSA and privacy issues, and we're offering to our listeners a very unique package, a thumb drive with all the NSA documents that have been leaked by Edward Snowden and revealed to the public, but they're all here in one place, one little convenient package that has all of these readable files that you can do whatever you wish with. You can plaster them on your wall. You can wrap gifts with them. Basically, do anything to drive the NSA berserk, because this information now is out there. And the only way it'll really be out there is if you help get it out there, spread it around. You know, with hundreds of thousands of documents, if you get the WikiLeaks part of this as well, there are so many words that have been spoken and written that have not really been analyzed. And it takes a lot of people to look this over and see something significant that maybe everybody else has missed. There's no way anybody, any journalist, could have covered it all. So by getting these packages, you will get access to a lot of primary information that you might find a smoking gun of some sort. You might find a hidden message or phrase or reference. Who knows? With this amount of information, there is something significant that I'm sure everybody has overlooked. But in order to get this, you must call 516-620-3602. A pledge of $75 will get you the Snowden files. The NSA thumb drive is what you should refer to it as when speaking to the volunteer on the other end. And if you want both of them, just ask for the package, the NSA WikiLeaks package, thumb drive package that will get you both of these, hundreds of thousands of documents, at least 8 gigs of data, for a pledge of $125. 516-620-3602. An update. Our tally has improved tremendously. We're getting a bunch of calls now. We need to keep that momentum up until the end of the hour, because we are doing an extended program this week, 2 hours of Off the Hook. And this is a very special deal that we're offering, something quite unique, because this is a unique place. We want to support it with creative, imaginative, rebellious premiums like this. And we like to hear all kinds of suggestions from our listeners as to what we could do differently or better, or ideas for different kinds of premiums we can offer in future weeks. You can write to us, oth@2600.com, with those suggestions and feedback. But for now, we really need to see a flurry of calls to 516-620-3602. You heard John Young himself say that this is a courageous act to have these kinds of thumb drives out there spread around. And it's something that is not on the internet, because we are sending it to you. You plug it into your computer, and nobody can watch you do that unless they're already bugging your house or something like that. They cannot see what websites you go to if you simply plug a thumb drive into your machine and copy files and print them out, or do whatever it is you want to do with them. They are yours to copy, to save, to share. 516-620-3602. Definitely a one-of-a-kind premium. Bernie, we haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I've been listening with rapt attention to John's words, because he's he may be soft-spoken, but he has an amazing amount of wisdom pertaining to why it's important for people to share controversial information from governments, corporations, and other large entities that would like to control our lives in almost every way, in order to extract their power over us and extract money from our pockets, or in some way using us as a product, chewing us up in their mouths, so to speak. So I'm inspired by him and by all the other people that have, over the years, hundreds, as he said, hundreds and hundreds of people, probably thousands I would imagine, John, would you think that 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there were people like Ed Snowden leaking information?
Sure. There always has been, and it drives authorities nuts. That's why they have so many spies out there trying to catch them. But there's just too many people sharing information directly. And so that's what was the promise of the Internet. Unfortunately, it's become quite hierarchical now. by control of the infrastructure. But I'll just say that I think the thumb drive thing has got a lot of potential. First of all, less than 2% of Snowden stuff has been published. But already the stuff that has been published, there's an enormous amount of analysis of those slides that have come out. There's new things being found every day that the journalists missed. They didn't understand what they were looking at. So the technicians looking at these few slides that have come out, only a couple of hundred have come out, and they're finding stuff the journalists overlooked. And they've done the best they could. They just don't know what they were looking at. And so that we think there'll be more of the stuff leaked in small packages, perhaps by thumb drive. So get used to it. This choke point of journalism is not working. WikiLeaks found it doesn't work, that you cannot control this because you miss too much. You need more eyeballs looking at this, more analysis. Is that someone put up a post just yesterday saying that Greenwald's ass was saved from being smeared by full release of the H.B. Gary stuff, because they were setting out to smear him and plant child porn onto his computer. And it's because that was all that was released at once that people discovered this was in the works. So this kind of controlling it for commercial purposes can hurt you. And so that we need to get it out where more people can see it. So the sooner it comes out, the better. But I think that it'll come out in bits and pieces because no one's going to use the Internet anymore to distribute this stuff. The insurance files actually are a ruse. Those have been set up to make you think that's what that is. And the stuff is being done in cypherpunkian ways. It's coming out in ways that you would not believe, in small parts. And so it's not being done by the Internet anymore. You could even say the Internet is a ruse now. Except for those people wise enough to plumb its darker side and use the technology to find their way around. And it takes some skill with that. So I think that it's important that your listeners at least expect more like thumb drives, small pieces of thing that you can look at on your own, look at it with your own interpretation. Don't wait for someone to tell you what it means. Take a look at it yourself.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's what you say really rings true because so many eyes looking at this information is the biggest weapon yet. Only 2% of the Snowden documents have been released. Is that because it takes them that long to even get a rudimentary idea of what it is that they're releasing?
Don't know. I've been asking that question from day one, and all we hear is that. It takes time to go through it. It's disorganized. It's not obvious what it is. We don't want to release it all at once because that would diminish its impact. We need to stretch it out, but that's been shot down. All those arguments have been shot down. We think that at least the Guardian is under control of MI5.
Interesting.
We don't know about the other ones, but they've admitted it. That in fact, all the outlets have admitted that they've been checking with governments on what to publish. Not a single one of them has denied that. Because they actually don't know what they've got, nor do they know what the consequences might be. Well, that means they've been read into the system. That's how you get read in. You said, if we tell you this, you can never reveal it, ever. People will be harmed. Blood will be on your hands, yada, yada, yada. So that one of the ways that you suck people into this is they come asking you the question, is it okay to do this? And they say, well, we can answer this if you never tell what we're about to tell you. And that's drinking the Kool-Aid. And so they're showing all the signs of that. All national security reporters have to drink that Kool-Aid or they don't get access.
Wow.
And so that's Baker. That's all these very smart lawyers hooking you with this. Well, we can tell you, but it can't leave this room. Or we can show you the paper, but you can't walk out with it. Show us what you got and we'll give you an answer. So that's all how you're lured into thinking that you're somebody important. And this sense of self-importance is corrupting. But the thing is, the worst thing about it is totally corrupt process, because once you're in, you cannot get out anymore without severe penalties. And most people don't know what they're getting into. And that's what the ex-spies say. You don't know what you're getting into, because once you're in, you cannot believe that you didn't know what you didn't know. But that, of course, is part of the apologia. And so I think that's why we need innocent eyes to look at this stuff. We don't need trained, experienced eyes. Trained, experienced eyes have got a problem.
All right, well then, if you have innocent eyes, we want you to call right now, 516-620-3602, and have those innocent eyes peruse all the documents that we have been able to obtain, the ones that have been publicly released by Edward Snowden and the various WikiLeaks documents that have been released since 2008. All yours, a pledge of $125 or a pledge of $75 if you want just the NSA documents or just the WikiLeaks documents. But you must call now in the next few minutes because we are almost out of time. 516-620-3602. Incredible amount of data that will arrive in your mailbox on a thumb drive. And the best part of it is that you get this without going onto the internet and possibly being watched by some agency someplace. It's entirely possible. We've seen so much evidence of it. And, of course, you'll see all kinds of references to it on the thumb drive itself as you'll witness the agency's words that they really didn't want you to see. 516-620-3602. Most importantly, though, that phone call that you make will support WBAI, will keep Off the Hook going. And who knows what kind of conversations we're going to have in the future about this sort of thing. And that's what I want to ask you, John Young. For somebody out there who has not yet leaked something but has access and it just needs to be inspired in one way or another, what would you say to somebody like that?
Well, one is it's a good chance that the kill switch on the internet will be flipped. I think that they are, in fact, going to shut down a lot of the sites that we now treasure as sources of information. I think that they are actually lulling us into thinking that we need a debate. We'll talk about this, but I think they're going to quietly start shutting these sites down. And so that I think that our site and WikiLeaks and a number of other sites will be quietly shut down. You won't know that it's happening. It'll be a slow squeezing of the process. That's happening to The Guardian right now, and I think it's going to be happening to The Post, Der Spiegel, El Global. And because they don't do this in an ostentatious way, it'll be a special operation. It'll start to shut it down. You'll start to have outages, unexplained. We have some unexplained outages. And so I think that it will be done in a way that you won't know it's happening. But I think that in the end, the internet is a threat to control right now, and that they're going to get control. So I think that radio is important. Mm-hmm. I think old-style number stations are important. I think SneakerNet, all the technologies that we thought has been surpassed by the internet should be taken another look at. And I think 2600 has a lot to offer. I wish you would mention your own collection.
Well,
part of this deal.
Yeah. Well, it's. I'm kind of bashful about that, but yeah, we've been around the Hacker Magazine since 1984, ironically enough. But it's the voices that contribute to that, the people who know so much more than any of us, and also have the desire to share that information. That's what defines the hacker world, and that's something that I'm just honored to even be able to share through the magazine and through the radio show. People like Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning are inspirations because they revealed information at great cost to them, to their personal freedom. And what you were talking to just a moment ago, John, about they are going to take action. They'll be taking down websites and you won't even know it. I think it goes beyond that. I think they will do things and you will know it. I think they will take action against the Ecuadorian embassy at some point when we stop paying attention to it. I think they will go after Edward Snowden when we forget who he is or what he is currently doing, which is why we have to not forget these people that are basically sacrificing their lives for this. We have to always be focusing on how they're doing, where they are they safe? And there are going to be so many more of these people out there that have not yet stepped forward, that are inspired by this, that want to do the right thing. And in the eyes of these extremely powerful agencies, they are not doing the right thing. They are a threat, and they could be arrested, imprisoned. They could have a drone fired at them. All kinds of horrible things that the average member of the public will say, yeah, you know what, that was necessary for our freedom. And we're here to tell you that there is another side to that. It's a lot more complicated. And the best way for you to understand it is to read as much as possible, to have access to the information that's already out there. And you can do that right now in the next couple of minutes because we are out of time. 516-620-3602. Pledge $125. You'll get all the information, hundreds of thousands of documents from the NSA, from Edward Snowden, from WikiLeaks. Or you can pledge $75 to get a partial thumb drive of just the NSA documents or just the WikiLeaks documents. But you must call within the next 5 minutes because we are off the air after that. 516-620-3602. Does anyone want to issue last-minute appeals to our listeners? Alex?
Well, I'll tell you, the implications of these Snowden revelations, you know, are very, very far-reaching. We just mentioned drones. Emmanuel just mentioned them. Literally, the front page today of the Financial Times has a short story about the failing drone sales and attributes it to the Snowden revelations. Literally says the political revolt against surveillance that Edward Snowden leaks have helped to spur his exacerbated fears about the risk to privacy from extensive use of drones in the U.S. airspace. Dozens of states have proposed bills to limit the use of drones, restrictions that some industry executives believe could stifle the potential domestic market at birth. This was a conversation we weren't having before.
And also, on that note, I see a story here from Russia Today. NSA public records requests are up 1,000% since Snowden's spying revelations. That's got it basically shows you the results that people revealing information can have. Folks, we're out of time. Once again, the phone number 516-620-3602. Thank you so much to John Young for being here, for being a part of all this, and for doing what you do, because that's something that not many people do. And also, of course, we want to thank Michael Janke for being part of the show as well earlier. Thanks to everybody who called in. Please continue to call in, 516-620-3602. Take advantage of the thumb drive offer. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. I believe we have another two-hour show. Next week will be the Personal Computer Show. And coming up next is Tom Hartman, our new daily program at the 9 o'clock slot. You know, today is somebody's birthday, somebody very inspirational who I think would have approved of this. And I think this message today is particularly apropos. And that's where we're going to go out with. Have a good night.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head, yellow belly, son of tricky dicky's gonna mother her, but top so me, but just a pocket full of hope. Money for
anger. Anger, the most misunderstood and most frightful emotion. Tune into The Positive Mind every Wednesday in October for a series of two-hour specials on understanding rage, violence, and outbursts in people around you and in yourself as well. This is Armand DeMille. Wednesdays at 1 p.m. in October here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Hi, this is Alec Baldwin, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide via the Free Speech TV Network. More people watch or listen to the Tom Hartman Program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. And we are pleased to have you with us and pleased to be here. You know, we wouldn't be here without you. Lee Fong is with us, is back with us. Lee, it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me on. It's nice to see you.
Thank you. He's a reporting fellow with the Investigative Fund for the Nation Institute, contributor with The Nation magazine. The website, of course, is thenation.com. And you just came from, well, the headline of the piece that you wrote is Meet the Evangelical Cabal. Is that how you say it? Cabal?
It's cabal.
Yeah. Cabal. Orchestrating the shutdown. Tell me about this.
Well, this is a follow-up on some really fantastic investigative work from the New York Times published Monday that showed that this strategy from Republicans to attach funding for health reform or defunding health reform to the continuing resolution had been in the works for months, that a secretive group of Republican and conservative organizations had plotted this strategy since February of this year, and they carried it out through meetings with lawmakers, paid advocacy, rallies throughout the summer, radio advertisements. And what my story does is look a little bit deeper into the coalition, where the money's coming from, and who the individuals are.
That's incredible. And so who are the individuals and what are they up to?
Well, a group founded in 1981 called the Council for National Policy was created by a group of evangelicals, including Tim LaHaye, the individual who wrote the Left Behind series, who believes that the rapture is coming imminently. His group, the Council for National Policy, early in the Obama administration, provided funds for an ad hoc coalition called the Conservative Action Project. And they've been in the background of many of the big high-profile
Tim LaHaye is the guy who wrote the Left Behind series.
That's right.
He's a multimillionaire, sold multimillion books.
Yeah, and he's very well connected with other evangelicals, many of the large pastors, the very prominent pastors, some of the advocacy groups here on Capitol Hill. What he's done is created a network with Heritage and its new advocacy arm, Heritage Action, that has gone out and use kind of a sledgehammer to corral Republican lawmakers this year to stick by the strategy of shutting down the government over Obamacare.
Is part of their strategy to default on our debt as well?
Well, you know, funny you mentioned that. I talked to several of these strategists behind this effort a few hours ago. They have a Wednesday meeting at Ebenezer's Coffee House on Capitol Hill. And several of them would like to attach the debt ceiling and hold it hostage in the same manner that they've done with government funding. But they're a little bit divided. This morning, Heritage Action actually peeled away from that coalition saying, let's not default on our debt. That being said, some of these gung-ho religious groups, the American Family Association being one of them, would like to continue with the debt ceiling strategy.
Is the pivot point of this to end Obamacare, or is it to just damage the Obama presidency? Because if it's damaging the Obama presidency, I get it. You know, that's politics. It may be awful, gruesome politics, and there's probably a large chunk of racism thrown in there as well. But if it's defunding Obamacare, and these are evangelicals, it's like, who would Jesus turn away?
Sure. And
I don't get it.
Well, look at what actually is being shut down by the government shutdown that they've caused. It's community health centers all over the country that are providing health care to the
poor. Kids with cancer and clinical trials of drugs that might save their lives.
Yeah, Head Start, children that need help in communities all across the country.
How can evangelicals, how can people who call themselves Christians justify this?
You know, I can't see into their soul and speak for them, but a lot of them don't think the Republican Party is extreme enough, right? They've been exasperated over the last few years. Even with the Republican Party moving further and further to the right, they still see the GOP as what they would call squishy.
Well, I can see that with regard to things like theocracy, you know, that they want the Ten Commandments and they want everybody, you know, and you know, let's start killing children that talk back to their parents or whatever. I mean, if you the literalists are teaching evolution in the schools. But healthcare? How does that, you know, how does denying poor people health care, health insurance, comport with Christianity? I don't understand this. And I grew up Christian. I don't understand it.
Well, there's a simple separation from the facts. You know, they're talking about how they've won all these victories in harming health reform, but at the end of the day, the only thing they've shut down are these direct services to the poor. And I think there's kind of a bubble where they're talking to each other. They're revving each other up, talking about revolution, about changing America, about a new birth.
These guys all have health insurance.
That's right. No, and I talked to some of these groups, these Koch-funded groups like Generation Opportunity. They provide great benefits to their employees, but they're going out on college campuses telling people, you know, don't help Obamacare, don't sign up for health insurance, and saying it'll be better for
you. Even though they already have it themselves.
That's right.
That's bizarre. So where is this going? How do you see this playing out?
Well, the crucial, I think, variable here is the business community. You look in the past 4 years, the way that U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, a lot of these big business groups, when they want to add pressure to lawmakers and tell them what to do politically, mm-hmm. they air advertisements. They hire advocacy groups to go out into these districts and raise hell or drive up negatives for these lawmakers for, you know, in preparation for their reelection. Right now, the business community has been pretty much silent. They've written angry letters. They've made angry phone calls, but they haven't done the paid advocacy that's really how they flex their political muscle. But that might change soon.
Right. I heard that the Chamber of Commerce a couple of days ago came out and said that, you know, if the old-fashioned pro-business Republicans were being primaried by Tea Partiers, and these guys continue with this crazy talk, that they will actually go in and fund the old-fashioned guys.
Well, so far they're a paper tiger. They haven't done it yet. You know, they're writing letters. They're talking to a journalist. But the way you make a lawmaker listen is you go into their district and you pay for a TV ad or a radio advertisement. And they haven't done that so far. But okay. We might see that shift very soon.
So it's just talk so far. Presumably because they don't want to be perceived as being on Obama's side.
That's correct. But, you know, we default on our debt. I mean, that's a game changer. That could be worse than the financial crisis from 5 years ago.
That's a worldwide. I mean, that could be the beginning of the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, it could be as bad as that. I mean, this could be like, you know, Britain after World War One. Well, literally the end of empire.
This is the side story that many of the so-called representatives of the business community have been captured by the Republican Party. They're not able to actually speak for the business community because there's so many partisan Republicans that now lead these lobbying organizations. So we might actually see a reshuffling of how K Street works, of how DC works, if we get to that point.
That's absolutely incredible. Once again, the group that is doing this?
The Conservative Action Project, which is sponsored by the Council for National Policy, this very evangelical end times group.
And who pays for it?
There's a group of donors, the DeVos family in Michigan.
Out of Michigan. They basically own Michigan.
Yeah.
And one of their nephews is Eric Prince, who started Blackwater, right?
Yeah, it's a very tight-knit network. Michael Grebe, this individual that leads the Bradley Foundation in Wisconsin, a lot of old money there.
Mm-hmm.
The Koch brothers have in the past provided funds for many of these organizations. They gave $500,000 to Heritage Action, which has been really the kind of most visible of these groups. But again, these are 501c organizations that don't disclose all of their donors, so we don't know the full extent of where the money's coming from.
Amazing. Amazing. Lee Fong, you never cease to amaze me with the brilliance of your investigative reporting, and you showed up at the meeting. I mean, you're hanging out with these guys just an hour ago. It's amazing.
Hey, thanks Lee, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Check out Lee's work over at thenation.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
No chance. Thenation.org. Lee Fong, spelled F-A-N-G. Check it out. Meet the evangelical cabal orchestrating the shutdown. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Actually, is Lee, can you come back on? I just saw this piece that you wrote for The Nation called The Hidden Danger in the Supreme Court's McCutcheon case. And Shane was, we're going to talk with Shane about this a little bit. He was over at the Supreme Court yesterday hearing this argued. And what do you see as the hidden danger? First of all, let's explain what the McCutcheon case is. Set it up for our viewers.
Well, this Alabama businessman, a big Republican donor, Sean McCutcheon, he'd like to donate past to candidates above the FEC cap for traditional political action committees and political parties, which is right now about $120,000. He'd like to
in aggregate to a whole bunch of different people.
So there's a cap to an individual committee, and there's an aggregate cap to how many committees. Because the thinking is, if there's no aggregate cap, you could just create thousands of dummy committees and then, you know, donate unlimited amounts every year.
Right.
And so the FEC has done this for 30 years, since 1976, had these aggregate caps. And what this litigation in front of the Supreme Court is arguing, let's get rid of the aggregate cap. But what would happen is basically remove the very last contribution cap that exists, because obviously with super PACs, independent expenditures, you can give unlimited amounts. The last remaining cap in American federal campaign finance law is to direct candidates and direct political parties.
Here, Mitch McConnell, $1 million.
Exactly. And the danger here is that candidates will be in the place where they have to go to wealthy, deep-pocketed donors and solicit these seven, eight-figure funds to basically run for office.
Now, that's what Mitch McConnell argued for yesterday. I mean, he argued, and this is, he argued yesterday before the Supreme Court, or he had his lawyer argue, his handpicked lawyer, that they should basically blow up everything. And the thing that concerns me about that is, A, that the court set aside 10 minutes for him to make that argument. That's massive.
Yeah.
Right? And the all, you know, the whole.
There's a special privilege, yeah.
Right. The whole other argument was only 20 minutes. And then, you know, and then the opposing side got 30. So he had 10 minutes to do that. And when you look at Citizens United, Citizens United was originally a challenge to a very, 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 very small part of McCain-Feingold. It was a challenge to that 90-day pre-primary window.
Yeah, and it was around just a corporate-funded movie, right?
An ad for the movie, actually, that they were opposed to.
Right. Right?
They didn't want the ad to run on TV because they felt that the ad, even though the ad wasn't a political thing, it showed Hillary Clinton in a bad light, and therefore you could construe it as a political ad. So there were like several levels of maybe this isn't even, you know, it wasn't a political ad, but then John Roberts said, after he'd heard the arguments, he said, why don't you guys come back and argue this in a much bigger way?
Mm-hmm.
Let's argue the whole damn thing. Let's put it all up for auction here. And they came back and they re-argued it, and we got Citizens United, and corporations are people, and money is speech, and all this kind of nonsense. Do you think that sort of scenario might play out here?
Well, what's interesting with Citizens United was, of course, you have the primary parties that are arguing their case, but then you have all of these outside groups filing amicus briefs.
Friend of the court briefs.
Yeah, friend of the court briefs, trying to influence the thinking of the justices, giving them other ideas, pressuring them to take the case in certain directions. And with Citizens United 3 years ago, you had a good number of conservative organizations, business-funded organizations, that filed these friend-of-the-court briefs arguing for a very broad decision in Citizens United, and that's what we got. And here we are in a very similar position with McCutcheon, where the exact same groups are again filing friend-of-the-court briefs arguing that, you know what, it's not enough to remove the aggregate cap or even the all caps, right? What they'd like to do is chisel away from the legal standard that underlies caps in general. So in 1976, the Buckley v. Filejo case, the Supreme Court said that caps are constitutional, contribution caps are constitutional, because they prevent quid pro quo corruption and the appearance of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And what these conservative legal groups are saying, the appearance of corruption standard is too weak. We'd like for the decision in McCutcheon to get rid of that legal standard.
You have to prove actual corruption.
Right. Now, the thing is, if you look not just at contribution caps, but at lobbying disclosure law, at gift prohibitions, at a number of good government laws, they all rely on this legal standard avoiding or diminishing the appearance of corruption. So if the Roberts Court takes a hammer at the appearance of corruption standard, we could see
with McCutcheon,
we could see future challenges that just wipe away all of these other good government laws, from lobbying disclosure, gift bans, basically anti-bribery laws.
All these things that came out of, most of them came out of the Nixon, you know,
right,
debacle.
Right.
Or, you know, they followed the fall of Richard Nixon, although some of them go back to the early 20th century, to the progressive movement. And
sure. These laws kind of started with anti-bribery laws for federal bureaucrats, for judges, and then post-Watergate, the Supreme Court allowed them to be kind of broadened to include federal candidates and other elected offices.
Were you in the hearings?
I didn't make it.
You didn't make it. Okay, we're gonna have a conversation with Shane then after the break and find out, because he was telling me some pretty outrageous stories about the jokes is the wrong word, but some of the comments that Lena Kagan made about Citizens United and the way that Scalia, but you know, basically because of the Marbury case, we now have a constitutional monarchy. We have nine people who are sitting about three blocks from here, who have said that they run this country. They decide what the law is. And I realize this is a digression. This is my next book that I agree with the fellow who's the dean at the Stanford Law School, Larry Kramer. He wrote The People Themselves, who agrees with Thomas Jefferson that Marbury was wrongly decided, that the Constitution does not give the Supreme Court the power to do this. And if, in fact, the Constitution says the Supreme Court has to operate under regulation of Congress. So, yeah, amazing. Lee Fong, thanks for being with us, Lee.
Thank you, Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can read Lee's writings over at thenation.com. We'll be back.